burns. Sweat it out, wait my turn. And now I am here with Ed Fletcher, filmmaker and journalist. He is producing and filming his newest venture, Do the Dance. How you doing, Ed?
I'm doing great. It's an exciting time for me and this project.
Okay, well, tell us about the project here. I've been kind of teasing this all morning. I've been anticipating this story. Lay it on us.
Former Sacramento Bee journalist, discovered this story years ago and developing it into a documentary. It'll be a feature-length documentary. We anticipate selling it to a major television or video network and also a chance for a limited theatrical release, and hope to turn this sort of crazy Sacramento story into a national project that talks about the limits of free expression both then and now, and becomes a talking point in how we're evolving as a culture.
So you're a longtime Sacramentan, I take it?
Yeah.
So being with the Sacramento Bee, so this is a story that goes back quite a ways. Walk us through this story and what makes it so compelling.
Okay. Yeah, I actually grew up in Orangevale, right around the corner from where we are now, and I'm working at the Sacramento Bee, and I think I came back to the Sacramento in 2000, and this older gentleman at the Bee, an editor, told me about this Pink Pussycat trial and how it happened in Orangevale, and I was like, what?
Sounds intriguing.
So at the time, I went to go look it up, and to my shock, there wasn't much to be found on the internet about it.
Okay.
And essentially, we had discovered...
So somebody else told you the story, and then you went back and did the research and said, holy cow, this is a big story.
Yeah.
Okay.
So there wasn't much about it. And so then I went to the archives and started reading it, and the more I read, the more fascinating it became. And at the time, I was in a screenwriting class, and I was really kind of looking for an idea that... I didn't want to use any of my great ideas. I wanted to, like, something else that I could do and just... write a 10-page script.
Okay.
So I wrote a 10-page script about what might have happened during this thing, and eventually it grew into 27 pages, and I was getting ready to shoot it and polishing
it. You wrote,
like,
a fictional what might have happened type thing.
Right.
Like,
right.
Out of your own vision.
I read all the clips and said, okay, who would this woman be? What would this be like? What would these conversations be?
Okay.
And just started writing that story.
10-4.
And then people started reading this, and my screenplay teacher or screenwriting teacher and a few other people were like, this is really good. This could be something real. Why don't you make this into a feature-length script? So that was sort of the first effort. I locked myself into my room for the winter and wrote a screenplay, came back out, and we started test writing it, and we did table reads and getting other actors involved, polishing that script. And then 2015, I went to Hollywood to try to sell this script, and that's where I discovered that, like, unless you've already got Hollywood talent attached or you've already got money, you're almost nowhere.
Okay.
So a good script is not enough to really get you anywhere in Hollywood unless you really rate the right connection to make this happen. So I get back, and I'm trying to attach talent, trying to find money. And then Carol Doda died. And to sort of back up with the story a little bit, 1969, the free love movement is reaching Sacramento, and the dancers at the club in Orangevale, the Pink Pussycat, decided within their First Amendment rights to dance fully nude.
Okay.
And the sheriff, John Misterly, is not about this at all. And they get arrested 7 times that summer and eventually goes to trial. And the trial judge, Earl Warren Jr., decides that the jury needs to see this dance to determine whether it violates community standards.
Okay, so I'm going to make sure the audience and I understand this fully. So it's late 60s. We're even though it's a free love time, we are a more conservative people than maybe we are today. And people want to go full nude and dance, and that's against the law.
Right. The sheriff's like, hell no. This is not San Francisco. We're in Orangevale. This doesn't fly here.
Okay. At the Pink Pussycat.
At the Pink Pussycat.
Interesting name.
So they also decide that to compare what was legal elsewhere, they needed to bring in Carol Doda to perform. And Carol Doda is this famous San Francisco topless performer, allegedly the first to perform topless and first to perform bottomless. And she also was the first to get breast implants.
Okay.
And it was sort of famous...
She was cutting edge, yeah.
She was cutting edge.
Okay.
So the judge agrees that the jury needs to see what San Francisco had deemed legal.
Oh,
so
wow.
So they bring her to Sacramento to perform
for the jury. So the jury has to go check out the strip club.
Right.
Okay.
Yes, it was the
nobody ever wants to be on a jury until then, right?
If they took more juries to the strip club, perhaps it would be easier to find jurors.
Okay, you make a good point.
So 2015, back to the what you asked. 2015, Carol Doda died, and I was like, oh shit. I had always assumed that at some point, even if I'm doing this narrative script, that we would do a mini documentary and explain what really happened, and we'd talk to Carol Doda.
Okay.
So we decided, well, maybe we need to shift gears, and this needs to be a documentary first, and then we'll do the script. The documentary would be cheaper, faster, easier, and aligns with sort of the business thinking of doing the first bankable project first instead mm-hmm. of trying to aim for the $7 million project, do the $400,000 project first. So that's kind of where
okay, we... Okay, so did you ever talk to Carol Doda before she died?
I did talk to Carol Doda on the phone. I think she had already started to lose some of her mental capacity, and she did not recall being in Sacramento. And she told me she had never been to Sacramento.
Did she recall being a stripper?
I think she knew that much, yeah. Okay. And I had the newspaper, the clips, and I said, well, I have these newspaper clips that...
I have proof.
So you suggest otherwise.
Hate to do this when you're this close to the end, but I have proof.
So I didn't know that it was that bad, and I always thought that I could jog her memory when I met her, but unfortunately that didn't happen.
Okay, so walk us through. I don't know if you want to give away the entire story now. Is it okay to do that, or how would you like to continue sharing this? Because I want to keep asking, but I don't know if it's bad for me to give away the plot. So
we can talk about
what happened in the story. So walk me through that story. So the jury goes in and they're going to evaluate whether this is really risque enough so that we ought to ban it.
Right. The judge says do the dance like you did before.
Yeah.
Under penalty of perjury. Slams the gavel, dim the lights, and let's do this dance. The jury finds in favor of the women.
Okay.
And
their First Amendment right to take it all off and flaunt it.
Correct.
Okay.
And then the government goes and says, we got to change the law. We can't have this happening here. And they made it a health code violation to consume alcohol.
When you say the government, are we talking local government?
There were dual efforts. It started there was a county effort. There was also a statewide effort. Eventually, the statewide effort.
The guys that I know in charge here locally probably wouldn't have that big a problem with it.
This is 1969, and who is gonna argue against this?
Okay.
So they make it a health code violation, mm-hmm. and that's really where the law has stayed ever since.
Is that where it is today, too? So you can't getting completely nude is against the law?
You can't have alcohol in completely nude.
Oh, okay. Okay, so they had a mixture of alcohol at that time, too?
Right. It was a beer bar
that
also had topless, bottomless dancing.
Okay. And so is there a moral to the story? Or, I mean, what happened there? So I can envision being on the jury. Hey, honey, I've got to go to the strip club. I'm it's part of my civic duty. And so I go to do that. What ends up happening? They find a way to outlaw it or to ban it. And is there a takeaway?
Well, so the documentary looks at the trial, but then like what's happened since then.
Okay.
And what you see in Sacramento County has been a whittling down of the number and a pushing of them to the fringes of the urban core. There's probably three left in Rancho Cordova. We're not arguing whether this is good or bad. We're just sort of stating what is, and mostly we're allowing women to talk about this and allow their voice to be heard as we express whether or not this is right or wrong or where this lands in society. So we converse this with Portland, where the state of Oregon found that you can't abridge the freedom of expression, and they wiped away all their indecency laws in the 70s and 80s. And what you have now is a much denser population of strip clubs and establishments. There's 54 in the Portland general region.
I'm actually going there for my entrepreneurs organization in late this summer, so
but
I'll have to check it out.
The difference is that those businesses were allowed to be a well-rounded business.
Okay.
They can have a real kitchen. You have a vegan strip club next to a steak strip club in one section of Portland. So they can have a kitchen. They can sell alcohol.
Is that
so they're not making their money off of the women. So the women can keep the money and the business can keep their money. And it's evolved into this world where the level of actual dance and expression is higher in some places than you do in...
Interesting. So if we were to look around the country, I don't know the law well enough to know what is legal or where the jurisdictions are. So obviously a local municipality can set certain guidelines, but then there's state guidelines and then there's, I guess, federal guidelines. So apparently there's no federal statute against taking it all off.
The Supreme Court has never heard this. So... Many other states have followed California's path to dealing with the issue.
And California's approach is you can do it, but as long as there's no alcohol involved.
Right.
Okay.
Or you can have these places that are topless only and sell beer.
Okay, right.
So they've become a little bit more of a sort of a specialty location, or it's all about the Strip Act, and less about sort of a business. I'll tell you that going into Portland, you find people of all walks of life in those places. And it's not as taboo and as dirty as we think of it in Sacramento. Hmm. I think if you talk to a regular person in Portland and said, have you been to a strip club in the last year? 60% would probably say yes.
No way.
I'm guessing out of my head. But... It was not abnormal because they're all over downtown. They're all over downtown.
You gotta have lunch.
Just jump in, grab in, grab something to eat, whatever.
Yeah.
Okay. Lots of people know strippers. It's not as taboo as it is here. They're also they do a big naked ride through Portland. So their outlooks towards sexuality, I think, is slightly different than. Mm-hmm. Than Sacramento.
So in doing this investigation, was there anything that surprised you along the way? Anything remarkable beyond the story itself is remarkable, but is there anything that's like the most shocking thing that you could mention?
I think it's that in a way, some things haven't changed since this period, that our views have become entrenched. And in some ways, because of the internet, none of this matters. Kids today have access to everything, but at the same time, our rules towards how we deal with sexuality hasn't changed. And we also look at the burlesque industry, and I don't know if you know a lot about burlesque, but these are women that are more like regular people that aren't getting a lot of money for this. Nobody's making money in burlesque. They're doing it for self-pride and for... their own sort of intrinsic value.
Mm-hmm. Sometimes it is we talk about like First Amendment type issues. It's a freedom of expression, people finding a way to express themselves. Is that where you're kind of alluding to?
Saying? So yeah, we're not looking at it. It's just something good or bad.
Yeah.
But we also want to like not tie ourselves to this mentality of that nudity is intrinsically sexual or intrinsically bad.
Are you, in making the movie, are you, where does it stand now? And are you having to, is it an R-rated movie? Is it PG? I mean, how do you make a movie that tells the story adequately, yet fits into, who's the buyer of this movie? Who's the watcher?
We think there's a lot of different audiences. I mean, I think when we were sort of crafting our business plan to figure out how do we reach an audience, we want to think about distinct audiences instead of trying to say like, oh, this is all for the masses.
Okay.
You think first about the burlesque community and those people that are in it. You think about people that go to these places, but you all think about historians. You think about legal scholars. You think about feminists. We've got an emerging conversation now about the Me Too movement and where the lines should be drawn in this environment and where things stand now. So we think if we can, especially with the feminist strain, is to frame this within the context of the Me Too movement and not talk as, cavemen.
Right.
But to bring in the right voices to help sort of tell this story. Right now, I'm sort of the voice and face of this, but hopefully very soon there'll be a mainline Hollywood actress that will be sort of telling this story as a narrator and hopefully going with us on a couple of these interviews, but to let them her tell this story. That's really the goal.
Well, you wanted to, you know, we talked about this and why share the story now? It's not ready for prime time yet, but why share the story now? What can our entrepreneurial listeners take away from this this startup that you're doing? Ed?
Yeah, we could talk for a long time about the business side of this, but parallel to the creative side is the business side. And my partner and I, DQ Hayes, we created a production company and a limited liability company to execute this film project. So mm-hmm. we're in the process of taking on investors and running them through the private placement memorandum and talking about the risks involved with this. And, you know, it's really scary to go from, you know, just a year ago, I was at the B and seeing the end of my time there, and now having this company and being able to accept checks and take on people's money, and the burden that comes with that of trying to make sure that we execute this project at the level that we're talking about to give them a return on their investment.
So just a closing thought. So advice regarding facing that fear, right? So you've been this guy who's had this solid job, this working for the Sacramento Bee, and now you're going out and raising money. And I like what you said is one of your biggest concerns is what are you treating that your investors right and making sure that you put together a business that actually shows respect for those investors and gets them the proper return. But I mean, you mentioned the word fear. Advice, where are you at in overcoming those concerns or fears? I mean, any secrets of how you're dealing with that?
Yeah, I had the benefit, and I don't know if it's a benefit, but you know, I'm not married. I didn't have any kids. So from that standpoint, I could take a lot more risk than a lot of people could take. And in my final years at the B, the quality of that job was going down and down every year. And part of every time a buyout would come around, I was, well, maybe this is the time. Maybe I need to do this. And when they did finally call my number, it was kind of like a shock and a joy at the same time, because now you know you've been freed to do this thing you've been saying you're going to do. And it suddenly became very, very, very real. But in doing this, you've got to like stare death in the face and stare your own sort of financial collapse in the face and keep pushing it and know that you've got a viable project and that you're building the team and that you're going to get there and to not waver. And all along, you know, I've always felt like I could get a job. I could get another job easily, I think. But knowing that if I do that, I'm not going to have time to do this project anymore. The 50th anniversary of this thing is going to come and pass and I'm going to miss my shot. So I was bound and determined not to miss my shot. And I had to keep telling my girlfriend that, no, I'm going to keep working on this for another month. And she's like, do you think it's time yet? Nope, it's not time yet. This is the time to do this. And just, you know, keep staring it in the face and saying, nope, not today. This is going to happen.
Ed Fletcher, a man staring total financial collapse in the face, building his entrepreneurial dream, building it out in the face of doubt. And I want to thank you. It's an exciting story. I think it's going to be great for Sacramento. I think it's going to be great for the rest of the world to hear what really happened as we think about our First Amendment rights, we think about freedom of expression. Thanks for sharing your story, Ed.
Thank you. You can learn more at dothedance.net.
Dothedance.net. Love it. Thanks, Ed.